Chapter 1. The Anatomy of Resistance. Why are educators still telling parents that learning disabilities are lifelong? Given the great weight of evidence for neuroplasticity, why are cognitive exercises not more widely recognized as a treatment for learning disabilities? We now take it as a given that the brain is inherently plastic, capable of change and constantly changing. The human brain can remap itself, grow new neural connections, and even grow new neurons over the course of a lifetime. When I went to university in the 1970s, I was taught that the brain was fixed. What you were born with is what you lived with all your life. This belief that a learning problem is a lifelong disability had major implications for education and learning. Education was about pouring content into a fixed system, the brain. At one point, it was argued that there were critical periods in childhood when the brain could more efficiently learn. Once this window closed, such learning became more difficult. At best, then, the brain was seen as a fixed system with brief periods of malleability. I remember attending a lecture in the late 1980s and being told that children with learning disabilities could be likened to different animals with various strengths. The eagle could soar and see the world from on high. The squirrel could run fast and climb trees. And the duck could gracefully swim in the lake. We were then admonished, never make the duck try to climb, or the eagle to swim, or the squirrel to fly. Find each child's unique gifts, we were told, and work on developing them, because children could deploy them to compensate for things they could not do. My own education had been grounded in this approach, and I knew from my own experience that the enormous expenditure of energy made in attempting to work around problems generated limited results. Norman Doidge, the author of The Brain That Changes Itself, argues that centuries of viewing the brain as a machine, rather than an organ capable of regenerating itself, gave rise to what he calls neurological fatalism, the belief that to be born with a learning disorder was to live with it until death. Presuppositions in any field, mine happens to be school psychology, determine how we carry out our investigations and what we believe is possible. Those presuppositions shape our view of reality and can become entrenched as truth, rarely to be questioned. This, too, is neuroplasticity at work. We all create a map of how the brain works, a map based on our knowledge and training. Many people have not yet formed or understood the new map of the neuroplastic brain, especially in relation to education. Many people have not yet formed or understood the new map of the neuroplastic brain, especially in relation to education. Doidge describes what he calls the plastic paradox. The property of plasticity can give rise to both flexible and rigid behaviors. Because trained neurons fire faster and clearer signals than untrained neurons, when we learn something and repeat it, we form circuits that tend to outcompete other circuits. Soon, there is a tendency to follow the path most traveled. If your occupation is offering remedial programs, this means, we've always done it this way, let's continue doing it this way. Once a way of thinking and practicing within a framework becomes habitual, it becomes ingrained, and a significant amount of energy is required to reshape old thought patterns and institute new practices. Although we now know that age, training, and experience make for a constantly changing brain, many educators have yet to learn how to deploy the principles underlying neuroplasticity, that is, to treat learning disabilities. Even educators who recognize that the brain is changeable are still engaged in professional practices based on the old brain is fixed paradigm. Certainly, it takes time, effort, and learning to integrate new knowledge into common practice. Meanwhile, most treatments for children with learning disabilities remain based on those old notions of hardwired brains and lifelong disabilities. Thomas Kuhn, in his classic work published 50 years ago, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions, explains how the process of discovery works in science and what happens when there is a paradigm shift. Every field of science has foundational beliefs that people within that field learn as part of what Kuhn calls educational initiation that prepares and licenses the student for professional practice. These beliefs and assumptions determine what is to be studied and researched within that scientific discipline. Research within the paradigm is designed to gather knowledge within the framework of the paradigm. In the process of research, as Kuhn describes it, anomalies emerge that cannot be explained by the paradigm's assumptions. At first, these anomalies are ignored or resisted. Over time, it's recognized that they violate the paradigm and need to be investigated. Finally, the old paradigm begins to shift, and the one that emerges encompasses the anomalies. Kuhn argued that a paradigm change is, in essence, a scientific revolution, and that the new scientific theory demands rejection of the older one. In this way, science develops. Neuroplasticity is one such new paradigm. What we urgently need now is a new paradigm in education, one that crosses the great divide between neuroscience and education. This new model will wholeheartedly embrace the life-altering concept of the changeable brain and use the principles of neuroplasticity. The end result will be a fundamental change in the learner's capacity to learn. Harvard University has developed the Mind, Brain, and Education Institute, devoted to bridging the gap between neuroscience and education. Its goal is to connect the disciplines, bring together educators and researchers to explore the latest research in cognitive science, neuroscience, and education, and apply this knowledge to educational practice. To help advance this goal, the Institute also publishes a journal, Mind, Brain, and Education. In an article published in fall 2010, Linking Mind, Brain, and Education to Clinical Practice, a Proposal for Transdisciplinary Collaboration, authors Katie Ronstadt and Paul Yellen note, increasingly, neuroscientists are identifying the neural processes associated with brain development, the acquisition of academic skills, and disorders of learning. Integrating this emerging knowledge into education has been difficult because it requires collaboration across disciplines. Part of the challenge, they note, is that neuroscientists and educators have different languages, frameworks, and priorities. I started Arrowsmith School in Toronto in 1980. It evolved from my experience using the principles of neuroplasticity to address my own learning problems. I had become increasingly aware that traditional methods of dealing with learning disabled students had only limited success. The Arrowsmith program was developed from research in neuroscience, not education. The fundamental premise of my work is that by changing the brain, the learner's capacity to learn can be modified. The principle of neuroplasticity is considered part of the field of neuroscience and has not traditionally been taught in teachers' colleges or studied widely in the educational system. Teachers who become administrators are taught that their job is to teach content. Thinking about rewiring the brain so that the student becomes more capable of learning content marks a radical departure from their traditional job description. When I started this work more than 30 years ago, neuroplasticity was being discussed and researched in laboratories, but it was neither widely known nor well accepted. Only since 1990, partly encouraged by President George H.W. Bush's proclaiming the 1990s the decade of the brain, has neuroplasticity been investigated extensively. I vividly remember standing on Yonge Street in Toronto outside my school in May 1999 as I excitedly told a colleague about an article I had just read. New Nerve Cells for the Adult Brain by Gerd Kemperman and Fred H. Gage in Scientific American. This marked the first time I became aware of not just neuroplasticity, but neurogenesis, how the adult brain can actually grow new neurons in the hippocampus, an area of the brain important for memory and learning. The brain was more plastic, more malleable than originally thought. Only as recently as 2000 did Eric Kandel of Columbia University win the Nobel Prize for his work demonstrating that learning in response to environmental demands changes the brain.